Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Power Your Life radio show with host and success doc, Joanne White. Author, speaker, and certified coach, Doc White gets to the heart of what matters most. She features guests and experts to help you consciously create more success, health, and well-being in every area of your life, work, and relationships. They'll share their success stories, wisdom, and know-how to shine more light onto your day and into your life. Power your life right now. Here's Joanne White.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. I am very excited. You are in store for a great show, and I've been talking to my first guest, Janet Powers, who is a bundle of energy and a media diva and a real wonderful human being, and we'll talk more about that. And she's going to really talk about are we marketing to women and what we're doing that's not right and how to really correct that. And that's important because many businesses do recognize that women have a lot of buying power. 94%, and these statistics may be a little bit off, but 94% of women are buying, 94% of home furnishings, about 91% of the homes, 92% of vacations, 60% of automobiles, over 61% of electronics. And so really women have a substantial purchasing power, and many businesses are just missing the point when they're not learning or knowing how to market to women. And it's not just about thinking pink. So Janet Powers is going to help us figure that out. She's an experienced entrepreneur, media darling, speaker and radio show host. She's founder, president, and chief executive diva of the Diva Toolbox, which is a website that has become the go-to spot online for women to connect with and to support other women. At the site, women find information, inspiration, and resources they need in every aspect of their lives. In 2009, Janet launched the Diva Toolbox Radio Network, which hosts over 150 different radio shows, and it's still growing, folks, including her own show called Across the Kitchen Table with Janet. And in 2010, she added an in-person conference of women from around the world sharing information to succeed, to grow their business. And there's another one in the works, folks. AOL, Jobs, and Dell were the lead sponsors for this conference. She's been featured in over 100 media outlets, including The View, New York Post, Page Six, The Boston Herald, WorkChick.com, and many others. And Janet Powers is the recipient of the 2010 President's Call to Service Award and was nominated for the NAFI Outstanding Entrepreneur Award. Her passion for helping women to connect with women has helped her to develop partnerships with PitchRate, Simmons Leadership Conference, the Women's Economic Summit, and Blog Talk Radio, and more. And in addition to that, where she finds the time, we're going to find out, Janet's philanthropic efforts include working with CARE, Army of Women, Friendship of Mel, Alvations for the Cure, the JimmyFund.org, and more. So I met this incredible woman, not personally, but just over the phone and talking to her when I joined Diva Toolbox, and found out what an incredible person she is, because no matter how many things that she's in, and what I just read off the list was just the tip of the iceberg, folks, she is so accessible and so has so much energy. And her goal is not just a selfish one. It really is a selfless one. Her goal is to really help other women, other divas, establish themselves and to really help people in the world. So I give her a tremendous amount of credit. And I really admire her, and she is an inspiration, hopefully, in your life, certainly in mine. Here is Janet Powers. Hello, Janet.
Well, thank you for that introduction. That was very nice. Thank you.
My pleasure. So, you say in the Diva Toolbox, the motto is, within you lies the ability to do anything. Find it. And you live by that motto. You are constantly reinventing yourself and constantly doing some wonderful, incredible things. So, can you talk about a little bit about what we're doing wrong? Why are we not marketing effectively to women when they are the largest consumer base?
Well, you know, the statistics that you read in the introduction are absolutely true, and they're very close to being 100% accurate. You know, each and every year, they actually increase rather than decrease because women have more of the discretionary income either from their own income or as part of the family income, and they do make most of these decisions. And what many people do wrong is that they assume that anyone, particularly a woman, is going to buy what they need instead of what they want. And the big point that I want to make to all of the women business owners and anyone else who has a product or service, identify what the woman's want is. Because, and my joke is always about, we all need handbags. There's very few women in this world who don't walk around with some type of handbag, right?
Right.
Well, you could go buy one. Yep, exactly. You could go buy one. I could go buy one at a discount store. Heck, if I really had to, I could put a pillowcase and put my stuff in there. But what I want is a Coach bag. I like Coach. I've had a Coach bag for as many years as I can remember. And so people buy what they want. And I don't care what kind of economy it is. I don't care what kind of struggles people have. Part of their kind of life being, their validation to themselves, is buying what they want. It's no different than, you know, we need to eat food to survive. We don't need special sauces. We don't need organic foods. We don't need higher-end marketplace products. But then tell me why stores like that are organic or Whole Foods or things like that, why are they doing so well? Because we want those things in our life. And that's the biggest mistake people make.
Right. You know, I think it's so true. It's about wanting, but I think places like Whole Foods also get to something else that's within a woman's wants and within and not just necessarily needs. So what is that?
Well, I think they get to, women want to feel better. They want to look better. They want their family to be healthy. They want to be healthy. And they market to women with a message of, not our spaghetti is $2 more than the spaghetti at the discount store. Instead, what they say is, our spaghetti is 100% whole grain, which is going to be better for your body and better for your family's bodies, both from weight control and the nutrients you need and all of those things. Now, all the food coaches don't call me if that was wrong, but that's the idea of it. What they do is they find the want that you have and they apply it to the product or service that they are offering.
You know, I think it's so important what you're saying. And I think, too, Janet, is that women appreciate value. So,
mm-hmm.
And you've talked about this over and over again. So when you're marketing to women, you have to make sure that you're also thinking about the value to them, what in terms of what they want. And also, there are so many. I was watching some television commercials, which kind of are really very condescending to women. I think women are very intelligent, and yet many of the companies that think that they want to get our businesses are talking down to them. What could they do to improve that?
I think they should start telling people what they know and start telling people what they need to know. You know, when you talk about the commercials and the messages that people send, you know, even when I look at small business websites, it's amazing to me how many people broadcast what they know. Nobody cares what you know. They don't. What they want to know is what you can do for them. So that's one of the other big mistakes.
That's so important. It really is, and thanks for that. And I was watching a video of yours yesterday. Actually, I watched a couple, but what struck me was you said something. You said, we all need to come out from behind the electronic curtain. I love that quote. I just think that's incredible. So what does that mean in terms of women?
Well, you know, we have seen the growth of electronic communication certainly over the last 10 years. What started out was email, and then IM snuck into the world, and then certainly websites and all of the computer-based information that we have, or web-based information that we have. And all of a sudden, this thing called Facebook showed up, and they were bombarded with so much data that I find that people are just frankly overwhelmed, and they stop reading. They stop, you know, people skim the first title of something and maybe the line. And, you know, it's funny, I remember in grammar school my mother telling us your first line of any paper that we did had to be the best, and the end of the last line had to be the best, because that's all people read. And what I decided was, because so many people are just glazing over the email and web-based communication, we had to do something different. And so my point was, get out from electronic and start being you. Start letting them get to know you through video. So you can still make an efficient use of your time, but you can reach a larger audience with your personality than you can when you write something. You know, I can write, but frankly, I don't come through unless I do a video, or unless you hear me speak. You know, I have definitely a very strong personality, and people tend to trust me because I say what I mean. And I think video is a huge piece, or radio is a huge piece of that communication. You know, it cracks me up when I see on someone's website, they don't have their phone number. How could you not have your phone number on your website? Do you not want that client to call? So we've been trained to limit our communication methods to electronic and written, and yet everyone's complaining that there's too much of that. So what's a client to do? Guess what? If I can't reach you, I'm going to call the next person who does have a phone number.
Right. You know, I've had that frustration wherein I've made phone calls, and also not only am I not able to reach some people, but some people don't call me back. And I think, you know what? How could they possibly want my business if they're being discourteous? And that's how I view it, because we're all busy.
Mm-hmm.
If they're being so discourteous that they don't even make a gesture, hey, I'm busy, I'll call you in a few days, but thanks for getting in touch, something like that. So I think that's important. Mm-hmm. Now, on this video, too, and I have to tell you that you sold me, because I'm thinking, oh, my God, she's right. I need to create videos. I have a little camera here, but what do I do with it?
Mm-hmm.
So you say, do something out of the ordinary. Do something extraordinary. And I love that, because I think that's so very, very true. And one of the things that you were talking about was to create that video. But I think it calls forth to women entrepreneurs and to women generally to kind of allow their creative juices, allow their individualism to some extent to soar, to rise, so that they can be differentiated in this incredible glutted market. And so I think it's really important.
Well, you know, it's funny, Dr. Joanne, that there are so many people out there who are touting the line of people buy from who they know, like, and trust. And I do agree with that. If the pricing and the value of the product is similar, that somebody will buy from the person who they know, like, and trust more. Now, if the pricing is, there's a huge gap and the value is the same, I don't care if it's my best friend since high school. If she has a product or service that's $400 more than somebody that I've just met, guess what? I'm going to tell her, I'm sorry, I've got to save myself $400. That's reality. And so the know, like, and trust factor comes in competition, not in comparison, if that makes any sense. And
yeah,
that's where I think the video when someone really can get to know you, who you might not be friends with for 20 years. I've been out of high school more than 20 years, but, you know, that connection is very different.
Right.
With that video. And I think the human side of it comes out to say, I believe this person, the product and service that they're offering, and the value they're stating. You know, I get a sense that this is a real human being. There's so much electronic purchases being made. Now, let's face it, I don't know who runs Coach. I've never met that man or woman in my life. But I trust that it's a good brand because my experience tells me they stand behind their product. It's something that lasts. Do you see the difference?
I definitely know. Go ahead.
Well, and I just want to mention again, I want everyone to hear that part of don't just do the ordinary, do the extraordinary things. And extraordinary can take you 5 minutes. If you have a cell phone, a video camera, something on your PC, you can even just record something. I want people to connect. I want people to feel like they're part of a community. And I think that's what makes the difference. You know, I grew up in a neighborhood in Boston. You know, anybody who's listening couldn't hear my Boston accent. But that community, still today, now we see each other once a year. We still have a whole neighborhood get-together and wakes and weddings kind of thing. Right? But you know what? There isn't one person in that community that I couldn't rely on with a phone call to say, I need help. I don't talk to them. I don't see them. But when you have that bond as a community, you have each other's back. And it's that connection of real people having real conversations. I love Twitter. Don't get me wrong. But in 140 characters, I'm not going to really get to know you. I'm not going to make money. It might be fun, but are you really making money with that?
Not at all. You know, I think you're onto something in terms of that sense of connection, because and it's probably true of men consumers as well, but I think we as women, we really reach out and want that connection, whether it's in social groups or business or networking or whatever, and so that's something that you do so well. You created this incredible Diva Toolbox network, and I've been on it several times. I'm a member, but I see the incredible women of such diversity that are part of the network and that are energetic and that you've pulled in some way because of who you are. That's really a credit to you. But how do you do it? What was the beginning? What was the idea behind this Diva Toolbox?
Well, I appreciate that, those nice words. Thank you. You know, I was in corporate America for 20-plus years, and because I thought I was, you know, could do anything. And I built my first house. And I had everything perfect, Dr. Duin, everything perfect. I had the plugs perfectly under the window so that during the holiday season you didn't have any cords running along your floor. And as I drove up to the house with my brother, I was 32 years old, a single woman, building a house by myself. Not literally with my hands, but you know what I mean.
Right.
And we were pulling up to the house, and my brother said, this is business. And if I go in there and I say no, when we do the final walkthrough, I mean no, because I'm here to protect you. This is a big decision. This is a big amount of money. This is business. And I'm like, he's not going to find anything. Sure, go ahead. And we walk through the house. And, you know, I'm very fortunate to have that kind of support around me. And we were standing on the beautiful farmer's porch. And he's looking at the builder, and he's looking at me, and he said, Janet, this house is gorgeous. You thought of everything. Now, he had been part of the whole process. You thought of everything. It's just beautiful. And he's talking. And he reaches behind us, and he pulls a piece of siding off the house, and he hands it to the builder and says, but she's not buying it until you fix the siding. And he said, come on, Janet, we're going. And we walked off the porch and into the car. And, you know, normally I probably would have cried. But I was in shock to think, I read 2 books on siding. What did he know that I didn't know? We're both intelligent people. What did he know? And what I figured out is that much of the data on the internet or even in books had really been written in a way a man interprets data, not a man. It's not a good thing or a bad thing. It's just a thing. And so for me, no matter how good of an advocate I was, no matter how intelligent I was, there was data that had been presented to me that somehow I missed, that these weren't nailed in. They were just slotted together. And I thought, I bet you there's a lot of other people who have this problem. And they have this problem, and they don't have the kind of support around them like a brother and a cousin and sisters and best friends and all of that. And as I was still in corporate America, I kind of searched out this whole theory, and I found that so many women had moved away from their core support team, and they were living in a different city with friends. But maybe they were just friends and not that kind of support you get from people who have known you a lifetime. And I thought, what would they do? They would have bought a house on the side. The woman, because I didn't know at the time, who bought the house across the street with her husband, their siding blew off the first storm. And so that's where the idea came from. But it wasn't until I left corporate America that this idea just came bubbling out of me. And I couldn't stop it. I couldn't stop it. When I turned 45, I decided I was done and I was going to do something else with my life. And I don't know why I did it. But, boy, I know why now, because this idea was ready to happen.
Well, I think you're right. I think women were waiting for it, looking for it, maybe without even putting a tag on it or a name on it. Now, most women would look at what you do, Janet, and say, where does she find the time? How does she possibly do it? Because we are all constantly juggling. How do you, you're a media whiz, I've called you several times and said, I'm having a meltdown trying to negotiate certain things in terms of the computer and being savvy that way, and you've always been there to help. How do you do it? How do you balance everything?
Well, you know, I think it's a couple of things. I think the first thing that does make it a little bit easier for me than most is I don't have children of my own. I have a very large family and very close family with friends, having always lived here in Boston. But I don't have children to get up every morning and get off to school or feed or, you know, so it does give me a different amount of time to spend on that. So I'm very supportive of all those women in business who also have children at home. God bless you. I don't know how you do that. I can barely do my own laundry. But I also, you know, I was in project management for most of my career in a technology world. And I think what sets me apart to be able to do a lot of it is that I have such a strong technology background. Some of it I can do myself, and some of it I can do it faster and quicker, even with a developer, because I know what he's doing. I can tell him exactly how to do it, or I can make sure that if he's going off track, it's something that comes to me very naturally. I also have a lot of project management skills, so I know in what order to do things and what priority. Now, that's the kind of the infrastructure piece.
Right.
I think the other piece is that I know in my heart, more than anything else, I know why I was put on this earth. And this was to build this. This is one of the reasons. I was put on this earth to be an aunt, and I was put on this earth to build this Diva Toolbox to help other women feel like they can do anything. I have been very blessed in my life with a very strong support system. And, you know, I remember when I started this business, my brother said to me, you're going to make it because you had the guts to try, Janet. I believe in you. Now, 9/10 of the world thought I was out of my mind leaving. I was a vice president at a large financial institution. I thought, are you crazy? Yeah, I probably was. But it was the best thing for me. I have a lot of people who believe in me. And I think one of the gifts I have been given is to help another woman believe in herself. Because no matter what your training or schooling, you can do anything. You have that ability. Sometimes you need tools or training or support, but you can do anything. And I've been given that gift to help people.
Right. I love that because it is so true. And I think a lot of women doubt themselves and really need to know that and really need to to have that behind them, that they can do anything, because once they get that, the sky's the limit. And it's interesting because I left corporate, and I remember I was an executive director, and I had to hand in my resignation about 2 months in advance because they needed to find somebody else. And I did so, and I thought my family, my mother, dear mother, and my sister were going to say, no, don't do that. So I waited about a month and a half before I said to them, guess what? And they said, oh, my God, what are you doing? How could you do that? Because I knew they would get me in panic mode. And then years later, after they saw that I wasn't floundering, that I wasn't on the street corner somewhere, that I was making it, they began to shift that. But it's important that you have people. You were talking about your brother and your family. It's important that people around you also respect you and feel and trust what you're doing, and that's important. I want to shift a little bit. We only have 5 minutes, but you also, you're marketing a lot to entrepreneur women, and so what you talk about is connection, communication, collaboration, which we've been talking about. But something that also struck me when I was watching your videos, Janet, you talk about really as a woman entrepreneur, really looking at yourself and your business with respect and not just seeing it as some little creative fancy. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, you know, that is my whole theme for 2011. In fact, it's the theme for our conference, which will happen in October. And that is, this is not a hobby. This is my business. And I'm afraid that many times when a woman starts her own business, that she gets the attitude from people around her, oh, isn't that nice? Isn't that cute? And she starts to believe it and treat it as that. You know, for example, Facebook. Again, I love Facebook. I have a ball out there. I've met a lot of great people. It's a fun conversation. But if I worked for corporate America and spent 3 hours a day on Facebook, I would be fired. And if somebody worked for me and they spent 3 hours a day doing errands, instead of working on their business or on my business, I would fire them. And I think women in business have been trained to think of this almost as a hobby, even if you're doing it full-time and paying your bills with it. And I think that's what holds us back. This is not a hobby. Now, there are some businesses that are hobbies, and that's okay. It's just a little extra money, but it's more to get out of the house and socialize, that's perfectly fine. But if you're running a business that's supporting yourself or your family, then you need to take it as serious as you would if you were a corporate employee of somebody else's business. And until you do that, you will not succeed, not in the way you want to. And you'll always have a reason why you didn't. But it'll never be that you didn't spend 8-10 hours a day on your business.
And, you know, I also think that if you're doing something that you're excited about, and you and I were talking about the radio shows that we both have on Diva Toolbox and Blog Talk Radio, if you're doing something that you get excited about and there's passion behind it, certainly your own business, how could you not want to spend time? Granted, we have children, we have other responsibilities, but there's also something about allowing you to do what you love. I think that's very, very important. We have about another minute, Janet. Can you want to talk a little bit about the 2011 conference and any parting words for our listening audience and what you have planned for us and for you in the coming years?
Well, 2011, no, that's okay. I can do this in a minute. In 2011, our word for the Diva Toolbox members is SOAR. We are going to SOAR in 2011 because we're going to treat our businesses as businesses, and we're going to connect and partner with each other and with other business owners to SOAR. And what the Diva Toolbox, its whole mission in 2011 is, now that we have this strong and large community, is I am going to connect everyone so that we're doing business with each other, that we are not only each other's clients, we are each other's vendors. And in 2011, in October, we're going to have our second annual conference here in Boston, and you can visit the site at conference.divatoolbox.com, and we'll be putting up the agenda in the next week or two. But we're bringing in people from across the country to help you really understand this is your business. then I want people to stop being stressed and overwhelmed about that. And instead, I want them to prioritize and execute, because that's what's going to get people back in business mode.
Wonderful. How can people get a hold of you?
Well, what I'd like them to do is go to divatoolbox.com and sign up for an account. And just like on Facebook, Diva Connect is the way to connect with women in business. You can send me a little message right there. That's the best way. I'm actually trying to guide everyone there, because then all the questions are in one place, all of my communication is in one place, and I recommend all of you to do the same thing, because then it's all in one place having to do with your business, not in 17 different places. So if you go to divatoolbox.com, just register for an account. It's very easy. And just select me as a friend and send me a message. You could do it privately. Nobody else sees it. And I'll respond within 24 hours, usually sooner. Don't you think, Dr. Joanne?
Oh, yes. I was just going to say, your response is amazing. You're really incredible.
Yeah.
Janet, you've been a wonderful guest and an incredible support to women all over the country and probably the world as well with some of the philanthropy that you do. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you, Dr. Joanna. If you wouldn't mind me just taking 10 more seconds. And I want everyone to know we have a phone number, and we have humans that answer the phone, not press 1, press 8, press 6. So
and
you can also call during Eastern Standard Time business hours. You can call 877-424-3482. So it's 877-424-3482. Thank you, Dr. Joanne, for being a part of the Diva Toolbox and having me on the show. I'm honored.
My pleasure. Thank you, Janet. Have a blessed day. Is feminism really dead? Has feminism done women wrong and dealt women a wrong deal and done men and women as well a great disservice? We're going to talk to Susan Venker, who has an incredible controversial point of view regarding the role of women, and she is an incredible woman who has been seen in many shows. She's first and foremost a mother and a wife. She's appeared on hundreds of radio shows throughout the United States, including ABC, CNN, Fox, C-SPAN, and she's worked with Human Events, National Review, World Net Daily, and the New York Post. Suzanne writes a guest commentary for World Net Daily and the New York Post, and she's also a regular contributor at Newsreel. Her writing tends toward the provocative, as evidenced by her first book, 7 Myths of Working Mothers, which argues that young children and demanding careers are not compatible. And she has a new book that she's going to talk about on the show, and I'm going to not steal her thunder about it. That book's been out for a while, and that book is very, very important. So here we are, Suzanne Venker, how are you? Hello?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you perfectly. Can you hear me?
Oh, I can hear you. Sorry. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So you have a totally different point of view, I think, from our previous guest. And your book, The Flip Side of Feminism, really has awakened a lot of people to what's not right with, or what has been the problems, I guess, with the feminist movement. Now, in a nutshell, can you talk a little bit, Suzanne, about what the flip side of feminism is?
Sure. The flip side of feminism is essentially, as you put it, takes a new view of American women. And rather than the obsessing over the one that we've been exposed to for the last 30 or 40 years, which is that women have it so bad and so much worse than men, and we don't have equality, and we need to change the country to make it so that we are equal to men, it is offering a completely different perspective, which is that women are absolutely equal to men, and they provide for one another very unique strengths. that we need to start honoring rather than this taking this other approach, which is that one is better than the other and that one is or has been subservient to the other. And so that in and of itself, of course, is a rather unique view. But what the book is ultimately doing is trying to empower women using a different approach, if you will. So really what has been the focus of the last 30 or 40 years is this idea of women trying to have it all and really this conflict between being mothers and being feminine and having that sort of traditional female role combined with this other life that we want to have outside the home. And so that has been one of my greatest passions because what I point out and have more than once is that the lives that you and I have today that are so multifaceted, they exist because of a natural progression, natural evolution over time that has been aided mostly by technology. Technology that has freed women up from the home to allow them to then focus on life outside the home. And that technology was created mostly by men. So I argue that actually it's the men who women should be thanking today, not feminists. So that's another big controversial statement.
Now you also point of view. Talk about, right, Suzanne, you also talk about how the feminist movement has done both men and women a disservice. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, I think, one of the things that it's very clear in today's world that the vision of men, the way that men are portrayed and the way that we talk about men culturally at large, if you will, is in a very derogatory manner. Now, there used to be 30, 40 years ago that men were honored and considered very important pieces of the puzzle, if you will, important piece of the puzzle, I should say. And their contribution was necessary and respected. Today, we have seen a complete demotion of men as respected providers and necessary and being necessary husbands and family men, and instead have been dismissive of their role. So that's one thing that feminism has done, whether or not it set out to do that, that has certainly been the end result. The upside for men, of course, has been it's allowed them to have very interesting lives that are very different from before, which is that, you can have sex with whoever you want. It's great. You can get away not having to take care of the kids because women divorce men at twice the rate that the reverse, and they take the kids with them. So they got a pretty cushy life, free of any responsibilities. So what feminism has done has taken away that role that men used to play, which was, as I said, a necessary one. They brought home the bacon that allowed women to care for children at home. And when you remove that equation, you have to come up with another one. And the only other one we have, of course, is government. And that's sort of the greatest divide between the left and the right, which is why we have the subtitle, What Conservative Women Know, because this really is very much about a battle between government versus family, which is a conservative versus a liberal worldview.
Right. Now, you mentioned something about divorce and that women are usually more likely to divorce than men, and I'll trust you on those statistics. I don't really know. But
yeah.
Okay, but the thing is this. So, granted, whomever has initiated the divorce, what happens then? Because then there are so many, particularly in this country, in the United States, many homes wherein a woman is the head of the household, is the same thing. What do you say to those women? How do you encourage those women?
Well, the bigger issue, really, when it comes to single-parent households is instead of focusing on that new reality as a positive thing and something to hold up as something to emulate or to glorify, I should say, which is where we are today, is very different from just accepting that that's just a reality of life and there are ways that we can help those people do do better than or do as best as they can under those circumstances. But the larger issue is we know that that is not the preferred environment for children. We know that. The facts are clear. The research is clear. So because we know that, then it would make sense that we go forward in figuring out a way to not have that happen. So that's sort of where my argument comes in, which I don't think in any way takes away from what you were just saying, which is that there can be support systems for those who are in that boat. But the issue is we are now at a point where one in four children, in fact, this just came out yesterday, this new report, in the U.S. are being raised in single-parent households. Now, if you and I know that that is not a good thing, if we agree on that, and I'm not saying we do, but let's just say we do, what are the steps then we can make to make that, to turn that around? And so what we're doing instead of that is holding the single-parent family up as some sort of not only good model, but that's equal to a two-parent married household, which is simply not true. So that's where my concern comes in because, again, the breakdown in terms of the traditional family setup of married parents at home is absolutely horrific on society, not just from a moral standpoint and just from from a psychological standpoint for children, emotional, I should say, but also economically. It's a complete drain on our society. I mean, that's the, again, that goes back to the biggest divide between the left and the right, really, is that when you do not have the family as the main support system for a country or for a society, you then are replacing it with government, and that brings with it, of course, a whole host of problems.
You know, I agree that divorce is not the most wonderful thing for children. I've watched that happen, even for the two parents that have to go through it because it is very difficult. But at the same time, and then we'll move on, at the same time, I think that, let's say, yes, it is happening, it's happened, and it would be great to espouse a better way to really focus on keeping the family unit together because it does actually promote better adjustment, et cetera. But at the same time, I think it's important that those women who are divorced, whether it's something that they initiated or not, that they need to know that they're not being devalued because that's their current situation. Do you agree?
Well, I don't think there's any chance of that happening today. I mean, single parents are heralded in the media. There's no chance that you're going to feel alone. You've got lots of support. You know, maybe 40 years ago you could have made that argument, but not today. And then, of course, don't forget men. There's the single dads out there too, and
there
again,
are many right. You know, and there are many single dads. I actually met one who became a really wonderful friend. And I won't go into the details, but he had three children, and he had a full time job, and he was raising those children on his own. He was mother and father, and he was incredible. He did it all, and so you know, I think that's important too. You talk about how women. Yes, the feminine movement took place, took place, but you talk about how women today are really unhappy. And can you clarify that?
Well, there was a report that came out in 2007 from the National Bureau of Economic Research. And in there, the title was The Paradox of Declining Female Happiness. And they said in there, the two authors of that report, The lives of women have improved over the past 35 years, yet women's happiness has declined. So I thought that was an incredibly important finding that requires a response. And the flip side of feminism is, in effect, a response to that. Now, it's an argument that I make. It's not something that you prove on with facts and statistics, it's an argument that you're making. Here's the connection I'm making. Here's what happened in the last 34 years, and here's been the result. And then we make our case throughout the book, and you can decide for yourself, you know, what you think of that case. But that was the connection between the flip side of feminism and that report. So, yeah, it's been my argument that ultimately the focus has shifted in the last 35 years off of the family as a source of happiness and fulfillment, and then the other things you do in life sort of surround that nucleus, And it's been the reverse, where the career and the life outside the home, or, you know, you can define that in any kind of way, materialism, success, in monetary success, has become the focal point of our lives, and marriage and motherhood, the things that are supposed to give us the greatest sense of fulfillment and happiness, have sort of been put to the wayside and sort of fit in around that other center. So that shift, which has, you know, which is undeniable in the last 35 years, my argument, has made people miserable because we're missing the point, is my argument, that ultimately you are never going to get from the outside world what you can get inside your home. And so my issue is, let's focus on that so that people, and how we're going to get that and how best to get that so that people can ultimately be happier, whether it's men or women.
So I know it's
and
not...
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, the reason why it focused more on women, I think, is because women are the ones with that more nurturing piece. And so there's a lot of hoopla about that, gender role reversal and wanting us to be exactly the same as men, which is never going to happen, and have men be just as nurturing and women be just as ambitious or what have you. And while there's certainly overlap there, you cannot eradicate those differences between men and women. And so to try to pull that out of women and say, well, you don't really need that nurturing thing to be the focus of your life because ultimately that's not going to give you the sense of fulfillment, has done what I'm saying is a great disservice to women.
So if we were back in with more of the nuclear family, mother, father, children, and women were given the, were given the opportunity of doing what we do best in terms as nurturers, would that make us happier?
It's more complicated than that. I think that if marriages were stronger, yes, and if women were, quote unquote, allowed isn't the right word, but if it was socially, if culturally we encouraged the motherhood piece of our lives to be more honored and understood as being something that's so central to women's lives, then yes, I think women would ultimately be happier. I think it's trying to get that out of them as though that's not important. You know, you have a lot of women today who are finding themselves at 35, 36, 38, oh, wait a minute, I forgot to have kids. Or, oh, gosh, now I'm struggling because A, B, C, D. And the reason why they're struggling is because, again, the culture never encouraged them to focus their lives or plan those lives around motherhood. Because ultimately, even though in your 20s you're not thinking about it, it is going to come and hit you at some point. And it's going to be a very hard reality when you realize that either A, your body isn't working with you, it's not cooperating, or B, there's a shortage of good men available, or C, you can't leave your career because you've focused so much of time on it that if you step out, all of a sudden you have all these other problems. So what I'm saying is, if you reverse the plan and make it so that all those other things get worked in around the marriage and motherhood piece, and this goes for men and women, then the chances increase. The chances for happiness and at least just being content, let's just go with contentment, increases by doing it that way. That's my argument. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes perfect sense.
Okay.
And I wanted to add to that because I do a lot of coaching and counseling, and I see women who get to that magic number, whatever it is for them, and they haven't had children, and they start panicking a little bit because that internal clock is sort of clicking, and I think it happens almost unconsciously to begin, because that's part of the way our bodies are made up, and they start really getting very nervous and wondering what they're not doing. So I can see where that could be problematic for a lot of women. I want to shift gears a little bit, Suzanne, and talk a little bit about is the feminism movement dead? And if not, where is it, and has it changed, and what's going to happen to it in the future?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, every couple of years, the big magazines will ask, how's feminism doing, or is it dead or what have you? And one of the points that we make in Flipside of feminism is that, no, it is not dead at all. In fact, while feminists may not be marching in the streets anymore, what they ultimately ended up doing over time was becoming absorbed into society sort of in a back way and in a more insidious way. So you have, for example, the Democratic Party is completely you will find that liberal women or left-wing women are generally feminist and can be found in the Democratic Party. Now, that doesn't mean that they don't exist as Republicans either, and that's one of the arguments that I make in the book, which is that feminism has infiltrated our society to such a degree that it's no longer a left-right issue. There are actually a lot of conservative women who consider themselves feminists. So that is because, our argument is that is because people have been taught to believe that feminism is something that it's not. They associate it with equal rights for women because that's what they were raised to believe that it is, and that's the only message they've ever heard. But in fact, it's not about equal rights for women. And so when you sort of open your eyes and do the work yourself rather than just sort of accept what you've been told, it becomes very evident to you, and you see that feminism is about something else entirely. So you don't need to hold on to that label to prove to people that you think men and women are equal. I'm 43 years old. I have never met a man or a woman who doesn't think men and women are equal. And that is not because that I was fortunate enough to grow up in the 1970s. It was because there is an understanding that men and women are equal human beings in their worth. But what we don't have now that we did before was an understanding that those are separate. While the worths are the same, the roles are unique. And so now we have a complete shift in our mindset that sort of has men and women believing that they should approach life in the same way, whether it's work, sex, children, geography, what have you. You should approach it in the same way. And that has done a disservice to them because, well, this is going back to what we were saying before, so I don't want to get too off on that. But anyway, feminism is definitely around us. It's been absorbed. It's mostly in academia, definitely in the media, and the messages are coming being filtered through a very left-wing approach to society. So that's why we kind of point out the chasm there between everyday, most women and men are a traditional bunch in America, but the people that you see mostly, whether it's magazines, television, and what have you, are of a different stripe. And so there's a chasm there. And so the messages that everyday traditional people are getting are conflicting with what they want out of life. And that's a huge piece of flip side that we focus on in Chapter 2. And where do we hear the most about feminism? Where is it getting filtered through and all that? And that's not something I can, say real quickly on the telephone, but...
Okay. Fine.
You have to read it. Now, you have to read the book. Yeah.
And we're going to talk about the book a little bit more in a minute. Now, do you see what's going to happen that in your mind with the future of feminism? Is it going to stay the same? Is it going to shift a little bit? Is it going to be some kind of backlash? What?
Well, I obviously cannot predict the future, but it is. I actually happen to believe that it's going to look like something later that seems rather small in terms of history. In other words, I think we're just coming out of the whole experience of feminism, where we're starting to understand that it really wasn't what it said it was, that it really wasn't all it's cracked up to be, and hopefully it will be viewed as a fad, but that'll take a very long time. I don't know whether this will happen, but I do think that heading down the road that we're on is such a negative road that people will ultimately either get wise, smarten up, or they'll just realize that they have nowhere else to go but to reverse because it's not the good road. It's not the right road. You know, dagger, I guess, between men and women is not helpful. I mean, if you want society to survive, you have to have men and women working together for the greater good and for one another, and they have to each believe that they bring something to the table. And right now you have a country where half the population, the men, think that they're not necessary, and the other half think that they're victims.
So you feel that the feminist movement is, at this point, at this present state, is still devaluing the role of men?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at, you know, you just turn on a television to watch any pop culture show on there, and what do you have? You have husbands and fathers being laughed at, being made fun of, as though they're just sort of a joke, and you could never reverse that and have that, you know, have the women be talked about in that way or treated that way, or there'd be this huge backlash. But people just sort of laugh it off when men are ridiculed. It's sort of funny to just make fun of men. But that's sort of a, you know, a chipping away on a daily basis of what it means to be a man. And that's not something, again, I think that we are just at the beginning of starting to look at men's role in society, and maybe they need a movement. But I think, and it's taken 30 or 40 years to sort of absorb this other movement and realize, wow, half the population has really been cheated with this, gynocentric sort of view of women, where they are just at the epicenter of life.
It's interesting because oftentimes humor is a way of kind of leveling information and allowing certain groups, ethnic groups, whatever, to begin to be supported and respected. And there were many shows years ago that I used to watch, or my mother used to watch, that really did something to women that you're talking about, that the shows are doing to men too, wherein women were represented as kind of airheads and didn't have a lot of intelligence and stupid and whatever. So maybe we're just leveling the field so we can get to, and I don't know if this is true, I'm just presenting, you know, a counter thought here. So we're just getting to a point where it is about, okay, we're not all stupid. It's about poking fun at all of that stuff, because it's not really true. There are an incredibly intelligent men and intelligent women, and it's important that we validate them.
Definitely. And
you don't have to respond to that if you don't want to.
I was just going to say the leveling is just hopefully beginning. Sometimes you got to get
extreme
to be able to get back to the middle, yeah.
Right. Now, where can people purchase The Flip Side of Feminism?
Well, we have a website, which is the title of the book, so theflipsideoffeminism.com. And basically all the information you'd want to know about it, and probably more than you want to know about it, is there.
And what's next for you, Suzanne? What's on your agenda?
Oh, you know, I'm sort of riding the wave of this for now. It's going to be a little while, but I have a couple of books on my mind, but I always do, and they always end up being something different from what I initially anticipated. So I can't really comment on what they're going to be.
Well, I wish you the best, and thank you so much for being a guest on my show. I think your point of view certainly is valid and getting attention of people, and it needs to, and people need to see that there are many different ways of looking at a particular situation. And you co-authored this book, correct? Is that with your aunt?
I did, yes. Yep, I did, with Phyllis Schlafly, who was sort of the premier anti-feminist of the 20th century. She's 86. So I thought teaming up with her would make an interesting sort of juxtaposition, I guess, between that generation and ours, and indeed it has. It was a great collaboration. It worked well.
Okay, and it does. And actually, I saw a video for the two of you talking about the book. Where can people see that video?
That's on the website too.
Oh, okay.
That's on the website too. Yeah.
Okay, great. Any parting words to our listening audience?
Oh, just that, you know, I hope that you use this opportunity, especially the younger you are. I think 18 is not too young to get started on this whole perspective and be, I hope that people feel grateful that, or happy, I should say, not grateful, that there is another option for them besides the message that they're hearing. And that is certainly the what I'm getting from people. I get tons of email, and I do sort of feel like I'm the spokesperson for the quiet majority who just don't feel that they have support for the way they feel and for the kind of lives that they want to live. So that's what I'm hoping that this book will offer for them.
Well, great. And thank you so much. And it's a pleasure to have had you as my guest. Best of luck to you.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Take care. And next week, folks, we are going to have Mr. and Mrs. Corey talking about their child and what happened in terms of really being to some extent abused, to talk about the terrible effects of bullying. And then on May 11th, we have Deb Scott, who's an author and a motivational lifestyle consultant, talking about her book, The Sky is Green and the Grass is Blue. And you're in for a surprise. So thank you so much for being with us, and stay tuned to the Power Your Life show next week. Have a blessed day.
Been listening to the Power Your Life radio show with your host and author, Dr. Joanne White. Listen often and spread the word about the upbeat show to grow your life in the direction you desire. Listen again and again by visiting divatoolbox.com and blogtalkradio.com. Thank you for sharing your day with us, and stay tuned for more exciting guests and events to come.